Good evening, everyone. Welcome to our Village Board meeting. Would you stand for the Pledge of Allegiance, please? I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. We have our audio-visual equipment working. Welcome, everyone. We will call our meeting to order. Trustee Harris.
Here.
Trustee Genrick.
Here.
Trustee Atwood.
Here.
President Rafter here. Trustee Dart is excused. Trustee Green.
Here.
Trustee Sampson.
Here.
Thank you. We are going to scratch item 10C2, Economic Development Committee minutes, for now. And are there any other changes to the agenda? Do I have a motion to approve the agenda?
Move to approve as amended.
Thank you. Seconded by Trustee Atwood. Any discussion? All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. Thank you. Announcements. For those of you who like to have Mondays and first and third Tuesday of every month as your entertainment venue, I have bad news. We won't have a Village Board meeting on February 18th because of the primary election. Speaking of the election, we have absentee voting available for the spring primary right now. You can do that either in person or by mail. If you want to do it by mail, you need to request it by 5 p.m. on February 13th, and an absentee ballot will be sent to you by either applying online or fill out and return the form to the clerk's office here at Village Hall. You can also vote in person right here at 1900 Lytle Street any Monday through Friday between now and February 14th from 8 a.m. to 4 p.m. Announcement C, Resurrection Parish Lenten Fish Fry from 5 to 7 p.m. February 28th, March 20th, March 27th, and April 3rd. This is a recurring event for which they have a liquor license, and it's a great event. So if you're looking for your fish fry, Resurrection on February 28th, March 20th, March 27th, and April 3rd. On May 2nd, there is another annual event taking place, the Walk to Mary. It is a walk from the pilgrimage from the Shrine of St. Joseph at St. Norbert College to the Shrine of Our Lady of Good Health in Champion. It's a 22-mile walk. But if you would like to learn more about that, where can they find out more?
WalkToMary.com.
Perfect. WalkToMary.com. Thank you, Chris. Next announcement. Village will be receiving sealed bids for the repair of village streets until 10:30 a.m. on Tuesday, February 18th, 2020. Here at Village Hall. Some of the projects being bid are St. Mary's Boulevard, part of St. Mary's Boulevard, Stanton Court and Arbor Lane, Garland Street, and miscellaneous work in Old River Condominium Trail. In total, we will be removing approximately 20,000 square yards of asphalt and paving about 3,670 tons. That's a lot. Are there any other announcements from the Village Board members? Trustee Atwood.
Just a reminder that St. Matthew's Men's Club Charity Wild Game Feed, 37th annual, is Thursday, March 5th. During our last meeting, I had indicated that it was at 4 o'clock. It's actually doors open at 4:30. So, but $20 in advance, $25 at the door. It is the Men's Club only fundraiser of the year, and all proceeds go back to the community.
And I saw somewhere online that they were looking for donations of venison.
Any donation of venison or pheasant is welcomed. We always need it right up until the day of the event. And because of this year's late hunt, venison is a little scarce. So anything you can donate would be great. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other announcements from village board members? Hearing none. Any? Mr. Lang.
A follow-up to Board of Education trustee Eric Van Hoobel. They do have a superintendent meet and greet has been set for Wednesday, February 19th from 4:30 till 6 p.m. at the district office, 200 South Broadway. And again on Thursday, the 20th of February, 4:30 till 6, same location. And it's open to anyone to attend, meet each candidate, and ask questions.
So each night they will have one of the candidates, I'm
guessing?
Okay, thank you. Anything else? Kevin, did you have something? Okay. Trevor?
Just a reminder to everyone, this weekend we have St. Baldy, one of our newest businesses. They're grand opening, ribbon cutting. They've been open for about 2 weeks now, but they'll have their ribbon cutting this weekend. On location at 11:30.
Thank you. Anything else? Hearing none, we will move on to item number four, public appearances. Is there anyone in the audience who would like to say something that or address something that is not on this evening's agenda? Jim.
Jim O'Rourke, 2339 Oakwood Avenue. Something special happened on Sunday. One of the former village residents was the second head coach to win the Super Bowl, Andy Reid of Sunlight Park in Alloway. Started his career here in Alloway for the Green Bay Packers in the 90s, became head coach for Philadelphia, headed over to Kansas City, and he won the Super Bowl on Sunday, making him the second coach from Sunlight Park behind Vince Lombardi to win the Super Bowl, so it would be great if the village somehow recognized him. Thanks.
Oh, excuse me. Do you have the years he lived there?
He was only with the Packers a couple years. He was in the 90s, 92 to 99, and he owned the house all the way up until about 5 years ago. And at 425 Arrowhead.
425 Arrowhead.
Yeah. Thanks.
Thanks, Jim. Didn't know that. Is there anyone else in the audience who would like to speak on something that's not on this evening's agenda? Hearing none, we will move on to item number five, action regarding crossing guard wages. Mr. Lane.
I also have Mike here tonight to help answer any other additional questions you may have. Like many communities, we have been struggling to get a crossing guards to fill either full-time, which is 2 hours a day, to part-time, which may be a hit-and-miss aspect. Doing a little bit of research of the surrounding communities, we are probably the lowest when it comes to what we pay our guards. Mike, through some contacts, reached out to the city of Appleton or Oshkosh, who contract this service with a company out of, I think, Colorado, and asked how they could help the village evaluate. Well, that price came in at a pretty scary amount, $102,000 a year. We are currently at about $62,000 as a total crossing guard budget, so that's a pretty substantial increase. What we are looking for is the approval to change the wages for our crossing guards. with a starting wage of 16, a second year of 17.15, and the fourth year kind of tops out at 18.40. This would take effect for the next school year, so this fall of 20 through 2021. Trustee Harris had asked the question as far as what is the budget impact. Based on the 2018 total hours that our guards worked, which was 4,013 hours, a lot of hours, it will amount to about a $10,000 increase in that budget. Mike's had several, well, he's had a few accept a position only to not even work a day because something else comes up. We've got a couple of part-timers that can only work certain times, which makes it a real challenge. We don't have much for a sub-list. And with that, I'm going to just turn it over to Mike and maybe he can answer or add a little more.
Yes, just to give you a little bit of a background on the crossing guards. As of 31st, we have 10 active crossing guards that are full-time, and six, they're covering six corners, and two of those corners have two crossing guards at each one of them. We have six substitutes, but again, like I say, two of them can only work part-time. One of them had to give up winter work due to her doctor's orders. So right now, I'm actually short one full-time crossing guard, and we're short two sub-crossing guards. The only thing that's pretty much saving us right now is the fact that it's winter, and we were able to cancel two of the corners due to there haven't been any students for over a month. But again, in spring, that starts up again on both corners, quite active. Other than that, like I said, the administrator said we were the lowest, and this would bring us up to the area. Last 2 years, I've had two applications for crossing guards. One of them trained for 3 days, and then something else came up, and they resigned the second one after explaining the job role situation and the hours, declined to continue the application. So other than that, we have had nobody, and we've been very actively through our Facebook, through our website, everything else, attempting to get people to apply. And it just has been pretty much difficult for me.
Okay. Do you happen to know if the other municipalities are having the same trouble in finding people?
I really don't know. We haven't reached out to see how they're doing. I know that some of them I've seen that have applications out there. So I'm assuming that it's pretty much like one of our crossing guard groups and one of the other municipalities too.
Okay.
So it's hard to get them.
Okay. So would all of the crossing guards then next year be at $16 an hour?
We would go with what the rate was for if they had been working. So if they have the 4 years in, then they would be at the top wage, $18.40. If they have the 2 year, it'd be up to $17, which right now most of them are at either the 2 year or the top.
Okay. Any questions? Trustee Harris.
Just a suggestion, or I don't know if it's even a possibility. Could we work with the Brown County School District on their quarter? I believe they have a quarterly newsletter, and if they could do something to publicize not just that Alloway, but different schools throughout the Green Bay School District might need crossing guards. Couldn't hurt, because I think that mailing goes to every household.
Okay.
to reach out and give it a try. I know we have sent things to the schools and to the churches and asked them to spread the word also to the parents and that. And again, we still haven't had no any luck whatsoever on it.
Get ahead of both supervisor or superintendent candidates at the open house.
You do have to remember this is a very hard thing. It's something that just certain people can do because you have an hour in the morning, hour at evening, and at certain times when one school or one area has early release, they've got to cover that also. Mm-hmm. So it's a come and go type of situation.
Yep. It certainly appears that we are under the local average, so it would certainly make sense to bring that back in line. Or bring it in line, period, I guess. Yeah.
Okay. Any other thoughts? No? I'll accept a motion on this item. Trustee
move,
Sampson.
Move to approve as presented.
Thank you. Do I have a second? Trustee Green.
Second.
Any discussion?
One other comment. It surprised me how low we were into the relation. And when I think of, you got at least two crossings on Webster, or are there more?
We have two crossing guards at Broadview and Libel.
Yeah.
And two at Hoffman and Libel.
Yeah.
For a while, we had two at St. Matt's.
Okay.
And Webster, but that's down to one. And our other crossing at Webster and Hoffman, we only have one because that's a three-way stop.
How about near Webster School? Do you have one on Webster?
No.
No. But in any event, there's some busy roads there, and in fairness to compensate for the responsibility and the kind of unusual hours and being out there in the weather, I know there's a budget impact, but it sounds like the thing to do.
And we have to remember we don't pay mileage. Most places, you're not going to get somebody that lives 10, 15 miles away to drive in. Back and forth, so you know, you're looking at a close area, hopefully retired.
Okay.
People in North will be in it, getting.
Okay, where does the $10,000 come from?
It'll be, hopefully we'll have some savings yet because of some of these corners that are shut down during the winter months. So I think we'll be able to cover that eventually throughout the year. And then it's only half of it will be for 2020 and the other half in 2021. So.
Okay. Any other discussion? We have a motion to approve and a second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. Thank you to those who keep our children safe. Item number six, action regarding engineering tech job description.
The time has come to hire an engineering technician. This position would replace the vacated AutoCAD operator position. Main duties for this position would be preparing and drafting construction plans using AutoCAD Civil 3D drafting software. This person would be responsible to assist with the updating and maintenance of street utility maps, plans, and records. Person would assist with the inspection of village street utility construction projects and would also assist with the maintenance of the village GIS system. The ideal candidate would have a two-year associate degree in civil engineering with a minimum of 3 years of experience. This person would have a good working knowledge of AutoCAD Civil 3D drafting software. And I'm hopeful with your approval to get an add-on and start to interview candidates for this position.
Okay. Any questions for Sean? Is there a pay range?
There is. The pay range would be $48,000 to $62,000.
And that's a full-time position because it says part or 30 or
it could be, depending on one's qualifications and availability and desires, it could be a part-time 30 hours or full-time position. Okay. My hope is to, by offering some flexibility with hours, somebody that's highly qualified for that position.
Okay. No questions?
When would we hope to have the person on board, other than yesterday, I suppose?
Yeah, with your approval, we'll get an add-on, and hopefully, within a month or two, we have somebody hired.
Okay. I'll accept the motion on this item. Trustee Genrich.
Move to approve.
Thank you. Do I have a second? Trustee Green. Any discussion? We have a motion to approve and a second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. Thank you. Item number 7, appointment to the Board of Appeals. We received an application from a lady who is no stranger to the Village of Alloway. Barb Copperroot has volunteered to serve as an alternate member of the Board of Appeals at this point in time. Barb comes with lots of experience in planning and zoning. She has worked for the Village of Bellevue for close to 13 years. She was a building inspector and zoning administrator for the Village of Alloway for 4.5 years. So she offered, and I'd like to suggest we accept. So do I have a motion on this item? Trustee Green.
Move to approve.
Thank you. Do I have a second? Trustee Atwood. Any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. Thank you to Barb. Item number 8, action regarding funding for emergency sanitary lateral shutoff valve to be installed at Green Isle Park. Mr. Jim.
Due to the high lake levels, Green Isle Park is susceptible to flooding. The Green Isle Park lateral, sanitary lateral, drains into a village sanitary sewer at Green and Level Street, or I'm sorry, East River, East River Drive. To minimize the amount of clear water that gets into our sanitary sewer system, we're proposing to install a valve upstream of the connection to our sanitary sewer. That valve would be closed when flooding occurs. In an attempt to prevent clear water from entering our system, we want to definitely minimize the amount of clear water that we send to new water. Staff has been working on a solution to install a valve. Mike Mollick has been in contact with a local contractor. We have just recently received a price to install a valve. The estimated cost to install that valve is somewhere between $7,500 and $9,000. We'll continue to refine that cost as we nail down the design of this valve. So I guess what we're looking for tonight is to get your approval to spend, roughly speaking, somewhere between $7,500 and $10,000 to install a valve.
Okay. Any questions? Trustee Harris?
Are there any other areas in the village where we could see this need arising?
No. I don't know if Chris...
Potentially Kiwanis Park would be another location. The situation that arises is those locations become inundated with water, as Sean had said, and then in those bathroom buildings and the buildings that are at those sites, there's drains, toilets, drains in the floor, and all that water as it's receding is going through those drains and into the system. So this would prevent that from happening. At the Kiwanis site, is the only other site that we saw this last spring that had floodwaters that got into that building. But that's just one building, so it's a lot less of a situation as opposed to Green Isle that has, you know, up to one, two, four different buildings that have drains in them. So.
Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions?
Do we have any idea of how much extra it costs when that clear water goes into the system? Do we have any bearing on that?
We have just recently received a year-end true-up or year-end cost and water cost. And 2019, we had treated approximately $200,000 worth of clear water. It was a considerable amount. I don't know if that's not the exact number, but I do have an exact number I can share with you.
And was a lot of that due to the flooding that we had last spring?
Yes. The rainfall that we received.
Okay. I'll accept them.
That number just hit me as kind of high. And are we talking about a plumbing issue being resolved in the shelter, or is this downstream where we got to uncover a lateral?
Village-wide, it wasn't just the INI that had to enter our system from the park. It was village-wide. The amount of they call INI infiltration inflow that had gotten into our sanitary sewer system.
Yeah, I'm talking about the price of the work.
It's pricey because it's not a normal practice to install a valve on a sanitary sewer. We have to go in there and cut out a section of the lateral, install a valve, and parts and material. You're looking at probably $4,000 or $5,000 maybe, and then the depth and location of where we're going to install it, about 11 feet deep, on top of the depth, you have to contend with the groundwater. You have to dewater as you're installing it. So it would be somewhat of a challenge to install a valve. It does seem awfully expensive, but we can get multiple quotes to afford this.
Okay. Well, not, but at that price, I hear what Trustee Atwood is saying, that's your recommendation to go this route.
I think so, yeah. We can, when the flooding starts, we can go over there and close that valve and prevent that water from coming into our system.
Thank you.
What size is that lateral?
8 inch.
Water.
Do we expect to? When would you put in this valve?
Prior to your approval, we've been working on it for the last couple of weeks. What type of valve should we use? It's like I said, it's not standard practice to put one in on the sewer. So, with your blessing, get started on it right away.
Because we'll hear later on that we're expecting the possibility of more flooding this spring. So it would be in place for the spring.
Do our best.
Okay. I will accept a motion on this item. Trustee Harris.
I would move to approve the funding for the emergency lateral shutoff valve with multiple bids being received from potential contractors.
Thank you. Seconded by Trustee Sampson. Any discussion? Hearing none, we have a motion to approve and a second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. Thank you. Item number 9, action regarding preliminary CSM for parcel AL651N1, also known as 3617 Delahunt. Kevin.
after my email that I sent out, I stopped by today, noticing that there was a dumpster and work vehicles in the driveway, and stopped in to take a look to see what they were doing. And they were remodeling the south side of that unit. And then while I was there, I talked to the owner of the building, and he gave me permission to take a look at the center wall between the two units. And it's a center block wall, and then up at the top of the roof line, there's drywall. So they would comply with a separation like I had shown you in the pictures. So my recommendation now, after seeing that, they could approve the CSM. I'm going after them for other things, for not having permits on the roof that they're doing.
So just to recap real quick, this is a property that is currently a duplex, right?
Correct. Yep.
And they want to split the property off into two single units, but they all have a shared wall.
They'll have a shared what?
Wall.
Wall, yes. It's considered a zero lot line
okay. Establishment.
So.
And that fits with our code?
Yes.
So is this a twin dominium type thing, individual purchase of
correct
either side?
Yep, it's going to be a kind of like a condo.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. So we would accept a motion to approve, subject to review and approval by Brown County. Because they're the people who approve it. We're just suggesting. Do I have a motion on this item?
Move to accept the CSM recommendation.
Thank you. Do I have a second? Trustee Genrich.
Second.
Any discussion? We have a motion to approve, contingent on the approval from Brown County, and a second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. Thank you. Item number 10. We will take 10A, B, C, 1, and D as one. I'll accept the motion on this. Trustee Green.
Move to approve.
Thank you. Do I have a second? Trustee Harris. Any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. Thank you. Item number 11 under reports and discussion, report regarding 2019 business walk survey. Mr. Fuller.
Yeah, thanks. So in October, our Economic Development Committee did our first business walk event. This is something that other area communities have been doing pretty recently, and something that we discussed earlier this year and decided to move forward with. Basically, the event is just selecting businesses to go visit in the community and gauging where they're at. So for our first event, we selected the Webster Avenue corridor north of Alloway Avenue. And the reason why we selected that area was really just for, there's three reasons, really. First was the diversity of businesses in that area. It's not just office, it's not just retail, it's really a mix of everything. The second was the density of businesses. That's really our largest or most dense area, commercial area in the village. And then the third reason was there's been a lot of talk about Roosevelt and Webster, and we had some conceptual plans drafted in previous years. So really just having the opportunity to go and meet with these business owners to see what their take is on everything. So those were the reasons why we selected Webster Avenue and provided maps, or two maps, showing the businesses that we were able to visit. We were able to visit 36 businesses. If you count, there's 35 shown on here because we did offer an online survey and we did have one business owner from outside of this area submit an online survey. So,
So some businesses we weren't able to visit because they weren't there or they're just too large, like Purvey and Belden. We were in contact with them on a somewhat regular basis, so we didn't send anyone to those businesses. So the survey questions were put together with help from the Green Bay Chamber of Commerce Advance, and then our Economic Development Committee kind of weaned them down and selected 7 to 10 questions. So I'm just going to go through those real quick, and if you have questions, please feel free to stop me. The full survey is at the very last page of your packet. So what makes your business successful and unique? There was a wide variety of answers here. A lot of people talked about the type of product they provided or that their or service they provided that is high quality, consistency, personalization, that sort of thing. But other people talked about what makes the business successful was location, longevity, and success of surrounding businesses. Something to point out, that 6 of the businesses we visited mentioned that they had been in business over 20 years, with 2 of those businesses over 40 years. So something pretty impressive, I thought. What are the biggest challenges of your business? A lot of the responses were more macro-related. You know, things that we really can't control, it's more state or national, staffing, increasing cost, finding new business or competition. And then more specialized and localized issues for things like snow removal or road construction, access, signage, landlord issues, or problems with adjacent neighbors, that sort of thing. What type of support do you need or expect from the village? Nearly 50% of the responses were nothing. We think you're doing a good job. Although we did try and press for more just constructive criticism. And of the people that did respond, communication was an area that we could improve on. And then also, businesses asked for us to create a destination to attract people to the area. So I thought that's, that was pretty interesting, especially knowing what we're currently trying to do for that area, too. So, what best describes your business in the next 5 years? So are they going to grow, consolidate, retire, that sort of thing? Everyone said they plan on growing, which isn't a surprise there. And then one person said that they would plan on selling with growth. And then as you can see, the majority of people said that they, the area they expect to grow in is the sales. Why did you choose Alloway? There's a good wide variety of answers. But quite consistently, the answer that was repeated over and over and over again was location. Location within the greater Green Bay area, location with close access to the highway, location to the hospitals or that sort of thing. How do you find out about what is going on in the greater Green Bay area? Now, this one, we didn't have a lot of responses on, only 11 of the 36 businesses that we interviewed responded to this one. And the reason being, I think, is this was a question later on in the interview. And if I backtrack a little bit, the Economic Development Committee, we went out in pairs. So one person was taking notes and the other person was asking the questions. And we instructed the pairs, you know, try not to make this as rigid as possible, you know, try to make it pretty fluid. So my thought is that this question doesn't really relate to a lot of the other questions. Maybe the conversation didn't flow in this way. It was at the end of the conversation. Maybe they just didn't get to it. But out of the 11 responses we did get, social media and word of mouth were overwhelmingly the most consistent way people hear about things. The press example is another big one too. So that was the final question, and then of course we do plan on, or we have followed up with the businesses that did request follow up already. And we do plan on doing this again in the future. We've even talked about this year doing maybe an online survey, more quantitative questions in the online survey, and then maybe more of a qualitative survey like this in person again this fall. So I think if anything, this just establishes a good baseline.
That's great. Any questions for Trevor? Chris?
It was just kind of a passing reference in there, but it said people thought it was a business-friendly environment. Mm-hmm. And you and your team or designated people went to 35 different businesses. And I would have thought that would be, you know, the first question and the first answer. Do you think the village is doing stuff to help you or impeding you? And I wonder if there's more to say about that. I just saw the one line in there about that. Were there a lot of responses, or most of them were everything's fine and really didn't elaborate on things?
Yeah,
well, you said snow removal and some of that stuff, but
yeah,
if they said, no, we like what you're doing, was it more a case your mayor, did they elaborate things the village has done that they find useful?
In my experience, talking to the people that went out, they didn't really push too hard. The businesses that I visited, I found that they said, no, everything's fine. And then you talk to them a little further, and they might not say that, oh, or they might come up with other things that, as they think of them. You know, they don't want to be saying that this is an issue, but then they're like, well, since you're asking, you know.
My guess, and you guys have more experience, if they had an issue, they would have taken advantage to air their issues if they had one. So that's a pretty good data point.
Yeah. Kind of a funny example, and one of the reasons why we're kind of pushing or looking forward to doing this, the peer has done one out for the past 2 years. And one of the things they found is the downtown businesses were having issues. Garbage collection was on Monday mornings. And so for a lot of these downtown businesses, that meant, well, they couldn't put the garbage out upon Friday evening because it was going to be ticketed. So that meant arriving prior to 6 a.m. or 7 a.m. whenever they start and putting out the garbage. So that was kind of an issue for them. Something that no one would have ever thought of, really, but something that came out in the survey, and something that the city was really easily able to fix. They just switched routes and were able to fix it pretty quickly. So, you know, yes, to your point, yeah, I think most of the stuff, if it's a really big issue, you'll hear about it. But some of the stuff, too, I think people just don't know to ask. Either, and so I think it's important to take the time to reach out and just give them a point of contact too, because what we found too is people don't even know who to contact at the village. So along with the surveyors, we gave out my business card to all these businesses that we visited, so and a letter that explained my role and function with the village, so that way they have a point of contact if they do have an issue with the future.
Sounds great. Thank you.
Excellent. And thank you to the members of our Economic Development Committee for joining in on that and sharing their time and talents with the village. Any other questions or thoughts?
No, I just think it was a great effort to get out there and re-meet people or whatever, and just kind of continue that relationship, making it positive. It's good stuff.
Thanks, Trevor. Item 12, update on the Southbridge Connector Tier 1 Environmental Impact Statement. Mr. Gene.
We don't have any new updates on this item at this time.
Okay, we'll move on to the... Nothing?
No.
Okay. Okay, we will then move on to number 13, update regarding community center options. Do we have anything there, Chris?
Yeah, a few ideas. I wanted to give the board just a quick update on some things that staff's worked on, some ideas that we've had, and some remaining issues, just so that you are staying aware of the situation with the community center. We did meet with the Green Bay Metro Fire Department, because one of our options when we talked about the community center was looking at that entire site, and would that be an option to, you know, reconstruct and include the fire station with that. And in meeting with the Metro Fire Department, their ideal, you know, if they weren't at that location, their ideal location to have a fire station within the community to best service our community would be within about two blocks of Highway 172 on Webster. That would give them an ideal location to be able to get where they need to get within the community in that timely manner. Secondary to that, if, you know, they're to remain at the existing site, ideally for them at that location would be to be able to front the fire station on Webster Avenue so that their trucks could pull directly out onto Webster and not have to make that next two 90-degree turns to get out. With that being said, that, you know, site would look a lot different. You know, that community center as you see it now probably would not be in existence. But if, you know, if the village decided to go down that route, you know, the site still could house a community center, just maybe on the east end of that lot with the fire station on the front. The chief had said that in this day and age, a new fire station runs about $2.5-3 million. You know, with all the needs that you know a new fire department needs, so something to keep in mind. We've also discussed other options internally of things that to look at. You know, if the village decided to sell, put that facility, the building on the market, you know, what would we do with the existing programs and uses that we have there? We looked there, talked about other locations and you know, whether that's existing vacant buildings that we have within the community or potential partnerships of, you know, discussing maybe a partnership with YMCA, with Heritage Hill, you know, some of those organizations. We talked about you know, the school district, and that really doesn't seem to fit our needs because of the timing. You know, a lot of our use is during the daytime with our senior programs, and that doesn't work with school. You know, with some of these types of properties, you know, if it were to sell, we had talked about the tax incentives, the tax breaks that are allowed, you know, for the right parties to be able to do some work to that building, the historic tax credits. I'll have Trevor explain a couple of little items with that, just to kind of give you an overview, as well as vacant property that's in our village that we thought would be a really cool property. However, I think probably cost prohibitive for us to go down that route.
Yeah, so like Chris mentioned, since this building is on the National Register, it is... there are the tax historic tax credits that are available to a private developer that were to, if we were to go the route of selling the property. And a those tax credits are valuable to an individual that knows how to utilize or leverage those. So an example, there's several examples around the community, Hotel Northland, or the YMCA took advantage of the historic tax credits in downtown YMCA. But another one actually was the Whitney School project on Webster in Maine, where they actually, the building was not on the National Register, but the developer knew how these tax credits worked and knew the value in them. So he actually did the work to fix up the building to then be able to list it on the National Register, then to take advantage of the tax credits. So to a normal developer, tax credits probably mean nothing. But to someone that knows how to leverage them, they are quite valuable. And so that's, again, just an example. And then we have been looking at, just as Chris mentioned, different locations, possibilities. We know that the bank, the former Huntington Bank, was bought by Associated Bank, corner of Colvin Webster. And so we kind of explored that route, just, and by explored we mean we looked at the building plans and to see if it would be a usable or viable option. It's about 10,000 square foot building, and nice property, and it has an elevator and everything, but it was recently acquired by Associated from Huntington for $1.75 million. So I guess, I don't know, compared to the cost of new, and it might be cheaper, but then what would you have to do to the building to renovate it? That's, you know, I guess that's a discussion to be had, but that's about it.
To follow up on that cost, you know, if we were to look at building a brand new facility, a building that may be similar to some of our neighbors. Ashwaubenon just built a new facility, a community center, within, I think it was 2015. That building was about $4.2 million. About 10 years ago now, De Pierce Community Center, they built that, and that was a little over $2 million. So, you know, similar types of buildings and sizes, but you can see what 10 years has done to the cost of construction. You know, almost doubled it, or more than doubled it. So, with that said, you know, there's still the possibility of doing renovation to it. You know, we talked about some of those estimated costs, pushing $1 million, but then are we getting what we really need, or what the community really needs, what we really want out of a community center? I think that whatever we do, if it involves reconstruction or demo work or, you know, site renovation, things like that, you know, the village is going to need to contract with a architect firm or a design build firm, you know, come in and take a good look at that and, you know, do the architectural work, which is an upfront cost to anything like that. With all that being said, we still have issues with the building as it currently sits. So we do have, you know, some sidewalk work, asphalt work that we had talked about early on that we did budget for out of stadium tax money. That was about $15,000. So we'll be looking to do that work coming up. Roof work, we had talked about that, $52,000. That is not budgeted for at this time. We are starting to have seen and starting to see more maybe interior damage issues, water problems within the, you know, on the walls and things like that, and as a result of some of the roof issues historically, and not being able to necessarily repair the roof to the tightness and the best that you need to do to prevent water leakage. So I guess to, you know, finish things up, I would be happy to meet with any one of the board members, you know, if you wanted to go up, take a tour, you know, kind of show you, I don't know, when the last time, you know, you've all been able to walk through that building, not just the front public part, but through the back, where a lot of that storage is, and take a look and see the kind of the conditions that we're talking about. And then we're open as staff, we're open to
you know, suggestions, recommendations, thoughts from the board, you know, things that we should maybe be working on or looking at to try to come up with a solution to this.
Are there opportunities to lease for a community center around the village?
I think I will. I'll let Trevor answer that. You know, he's more in tune with that type of a thing. Current options, I'm not sure. I guess I would have to do some research. But if we're talking about maybe building new and leasing it, leasing the space at least temporarily, that's something that other communities have done in the past. And I know quite a few communities actually will lease a library. That's kind of a popular trend now. It's just to fund the library. But I know that type of thing has been done and is continued to be done quite a bit. Kekana leases their library. I mean, that's the one that's coming to my mind right now, but I know there are others.
We don't have an opportunity to build on to this building, do we?
I don't believe so. Parking would become a major issue. And we try to utilize this room, and the recreation staff does a nice job with hosting some of the special programming, whether it be seminars and stuff. Mm-hmm. But, and then, some of this tax preparation in the spring. So, when we do that tax preparation, it becomes, there's no place for anyone to park.
Okay.
And with court being here, too. So, okay. I guess, you know, to maybe jump a little bit on what Trevor and Chris were saying. But we're trying to look at other options and stay, you know, mind is open. Whether that becomes a survey that is put together for the community, we haven't really sat down and talked to those other users of the facility yet to find out what their thoughts are, what their needs might be, and all that would have to take place. Mm-hmm. It needs to take place. It's just finding the time to make that happen, because that's important to find out, are their needs being met, and if not, what is it that needs to be done, especially if we invest into that building or into a new building. So yeah, we just continue to talk amongst ourselves and research.
I have a request from the audience to suspend rules.
Sure. I mean, I would make that motion.
Trustee Gendron, I'll second. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. Come on up, Judy.
Aye. Thank you. Judy Poe, 2375 Riverside Drive. I like the thoroughness that you presented here this evening, and I'm glad that you're thinking about doing something about it. I have one question, and I wonder whether you considered this, and that is, when you talk about taxes being available to a certain person who would know how to use them and develop it, how long do you think that property would sit before it's sold? I'm going back and thinking about the pump house, and I'm thinking about where the brewery is now, and how many years did we have to sit on that property before it sold and we had some income from it? And what do you think the chances are of this if you decide not to do some renovation or something? Thank you.
Thank you, Judy. Excellent question. I'll accept the motion to pick up the rules. Trustee Genrick, seconded by Trustee Harris. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. Back to you, Mr. Lang. Any questions?
Do we know, is Associated thinking moving into that building? because obviously they're right up at the next corner, and they don't need two sites, I would assume. But I don't know what their plan. I obviously don't know what their plans are.
From my connections with the individual in charge of real estate for Associated Bank, it is something that will be sold. Oh. And whether it's going to be sold individually or as a part of a larger sale.
The existing one or Huntington?
The Huntington one.
Okay.
A little larger than your standard bank anymore.
Yeah.
About three times.
That's amazing.
I want to talk more about the fire department angle. It's my understanding that we own the current fire station, the land and the building.
Correct.
If there's maintenance in that building, is that ours?
Correct.
Okay. Did it come up, maybe I missed it in your conversation, what if the fire department thinks that that's a suitable home for many years to come, or do they have plans in that regard? That could make a difference.
Yes, in discussions with the fire department, they have requested updating to the facility.
And they,
it's
put no money into that. They're asking our village.
Correct.
To give them a better place.
Correct.
Okay.
You know, the building is almost 50 years old. It was built in the early 70s. They're also have been discussing with us the potential for adding another vehicle bay at some point in the future. They're thinking that they need would like to put a ladder truck at that facility. So, you know, by doing that, then they would need to put an additional vehicle bay to the west if it were to go on that existing building.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions? Thank you very much, Chris. Moving on to number 14, Regional Emergency Operations, Mr. Lay.
Well, I'm trying to do my best to recap some of the events that have taken place as of recent. Brown County Emergency Management has been coordinating with all the communities around here to better be prepared. And what does that mean? It's the code red aspect where individuals could sign up and get alerts for various emergencies. Debbie's been posting that for the last probably 2 years now, if not more, to encourage people to sign up for that. Trying to create that common message that is being addressed. We're all facing the potential and most likely additional flooding this year with the record high water levels, and trying to get better understanding of what words or what do we need to get out to the residents. Because a lot of the responsibility does fall on the residents themselves to be prepared. And that was the big message yesterday in the press conference. And if you haven't seen it, you can certainly send that out. Debbie sent an email out with all the various TV stations that were there that were talking about roles and responsibilities. The village does have a role, the county has a role, but each and every individual has a role to play as well. So Debbie and I have, Debbie's attended a couple of the meetings. There's two various sections to that. One is the information component of it, and the other aspect is the action plan. Jason is part of that. Jim Sigelski, myself, and I think maybe Dave Disher may have gone to the meeting, but we've got more of those coming up. Out of those meetings are, you know, Brown County purchased a sandbag machine to assist with filling sandbags. In fact, Trevor, if you want to hit the pictures, this is just some of the things that we have started. We've got all those sandbags sitting in the back. We're ready to go. And
that's here in the alleyway?
That's right here in our. And it could be available for some of the residents. It could, you know, certainly it's for some of our needs, but Did you vote, Trevor? You see, there's a generator and a large pump ready to go. What else do we have? We've got additional pumps that and hoses, all on pallets, ready to be loaded up in a truck. Those will actually, I think, be placed on a trailer, correct?
Right.
We're rigging a trailer with barricades, the essentials that we need to respond quickly. The meeting that Jason, the street department, myself, and others will be attending is the action plan. In our basic plan that I put together back in 2015, and if you don't recall it, please let me know because I can get you a copy. Is it 100%? No. But it gives us a good indication on roles and responsibilities. Debbie as the village clerk, Julie as the finance director, your roles and responsibilities as trustees, the pecking order in the event the village president is out of town to declare an emergency, sign off on invoices and those sort of things, press conferences. Who is in charge of running those press conferences? Street departments, their roles and responsibilities with communicating with the county to barricade roads, get that information to the emergency operations center so those maps can be updated for people. Parks departments, roles and responsibilities. In the event you've got trees down, and of course, they are dealing with the parks themselves, as well as helping out wherever they can. So the action plan that I put together a few years ago, certainly revisit it, and you don't have to read it front to back, but at least gives you an idea where your roles and responsibilities fall, who's doing what. One of the biggest things that I think you need to take into consideration or understand is the fire department and the sheriff's department, those are what they do on a daily basis. And relinquishing those roles and responsibilities and let them handle the majority of the coordinating and staff is in the background. Department heads, Debbie, trustees, village president, attending the call center out at the BOC center, trying to educate residents, communicate. Can't say that enough, the communication aspect. And the roles and responsibility of each and every one of us. One of the other things that I'll let Sean maybe explain this a little bit more, but we have two of these very critical sites in the village. And the sandbags, we sandbag them to protect them, and they were built, I believe, to be above the 100-year flood?
Right, correct.
I don't know, is it a 200-year flood? 300-year flood? Now it's going to be the next norm around here. But we're evaluating, and I'll let Sean kind of talk a little bit about what they're doing right now with those locations.
I've been in contact with McMahon Associates to come up with a cost to adjust that equipment, the lift station equipment, the cabinet, electrical boxes, the manway down into the actual lift station. McMahon is putting together a proposal to the village to look at both lift stations and determine what it might cost to adjust those facilities to an elevation that they would determine. Is that, as Brad mentioned, is that the 200-year flood? Is that the 500-year flood? And I'm sure based on the equipment, there's some limitations on how I can bring that equipment. So we're hopefully within a couple weeks, 2 to 3 weeks, we know what it may cost to adjust that equipment and get it to an elevation outside of a flood of some sort, major flood of some sort.
What happens if that gets wet?
We could lose the lift station.
And what would happen?
Well, we'd either have to repair it or replace it.
What does that do to us?
Oh, what does it do? Yeah, well, then our wastewater would back up, yes.
Into the homes.
Well, we would go over there with a pump and start the pump.
And when you end up activating pumps and you're pumping directly into Distributor, then you've got reporting responsibilities to the DNR.
Yep.
You know, you're just putting stuff where it doesn't belong.
Right.
Going back to, and I apologize for jumping around a little bit, but some of the stuff is important and needs to get out. If you do not have flood insurance, that I would encourage you to inquire. The village is part of a CRS program. Thanks to Trevor, Kevin put a lot of time into that. That helps residents that fall within the floodplain to get a reduction in their flood insurance. If you do not have a rider on your homeowner's insurance for sump pump failure, I would encourage you to inquire about that. I looked at mine last night because I was pretty sure I did that many, many years ago, and I certainly do. I have that little rider on there. To me, it's well worth what I'm paying, which is not a lot. It's $25,000 of coverage in the event my sump pump fails. And, you know, it doesn't matter where you're at. In the community, up on the hill or down near the river, it can happen. I'd encourage people to do their due diligence, check with their insurance agent, and see what they can do to help protect themselves. Backflow preventers, another big item that is being talked about in our meetings and within staff is you know, encourage people to look into that as well. Backflow preventer, Sean, if you want to kind of talk a little bit more about what the backflow
is
in a home?
Sure. It would be installed not too far from your cleanout, and it would prevent water to leave your home. But in the event the sanitary sewer surcharge or backup, it wouldn't allow that water to come back into your basement and up through the floor drain.
That's like the check valve on your sump pump.
Debbie, what have I missed? There's so much that has taken place. There is a website that has been created, and it came out of some of the meetings that Debbie has been at. A lot of frequently asked questions. There's a section on there. There's mapping. You can check to see if you are in the floodplain.
What was the battery-operated sump pump?
Battery-operated sump pump is not a bad thing to have. You know, we take it for granted that you know, it's you have one and hopefully it never goes off, but in my case, mine goes off quite a bit. And you'll start to listen for that, especially when it's raining heavily outside or you know, a lot of snow melt.
Okay.
President Rafter.
Yes, Trustee Harris.
How does a resident know whether or not they have a backflow valve on their property?
Good question.
It's Kevin.
I think that'd be a good question for Kevin. That could be directed to Kevin, and he could probably help answer that question for them. This is the website that has been created. And there's a lot of information on there. We've got the Red Crosses involved with this. You've got GB, University of Green Bay. I mean, you name it, the United Nations, everybody is involved with coming up with trying to educate the residents to the best of our ability. Evacuation plan, that's one thing that was talked about yesterday in the press release, is know your evacuation plan. You know, if you have to understand where you're located and if you're Living on Lytle Street, your evacuation plan most likely is not going to be towards the east. You're going right to the East River. So keep some of those things in mind. They talk about having a supply pack ready to go. They talk about preparing yourself ahead of time, friends or family that you could go to. And just those are the good things to start to talk about, because most likely it's going to happen. And you know, living here for the last 25 years, it doesn't take much of a northeast wind when the water is high to start to create some of that flooding. And now with the water extremely high, it's going to take even that much less water to really, or additional rainfall to cause problems.
And I know, I don't know if it's the DNR or the Corps of Engineers, but there's some grant out there for water property along waterways. I think it's the DNR, maybe.
Coastal management or something.
Yeah, coastal management to repurpose those properties. I know Green Bay is looking at purchasing some property along the East River. Does something like our lift station, would that fit into a grant-eligible expense, do you think?
That'd be something I'd have to look into off the top of my head. I don't know.
And I think Senator Coles is very involved in all this, so that may be a good question for his office.
Okay. Any others?
Again, if you don't mind, I'd refer back to Debbie. Debbie, have I missed anything that should be talked about?
Do you have the copy of all my notes? I don't have them with me.
Pick stuff up off the floor? That's an easy one.
Pick stuff up off the floor, exactly.
Be prepared, stay informed.
Do not drive through moving water. It happens all the time. Whether the squad is out there with their lights on, blocking, and people still try to go around them.
If there's water in your basement, do not go in the basement. Find out where your shutoffs are or who to call to have your electricity shut off.
Okay.
Just curious, I remember hearing, when was that big flood? Was that late February or March last year? Might have been January.
March.
And hearing the recap and the staff and the response at Greenout, you know, was exemplary. Did you hear much from residents, compliments or complaints, how the village could have done things differently or more, or that actually went about as well as could be expected? I mean, did you hear things of this thing where you thought, geez, we should have done that last year, we can think of this for next time?
I think that people signing up on the Code Red, the communication, like, you know, if I would have been notified, you know, maybe I would have taken a different action. But some of that, you know, hate to sound so cruel, but a lot of it is the responsibility of each and every one of us to do our due diligence. From the village standpoint, you know, blocking off roads and people still wanting to go through them, we were having that.
That's human nature, but people blaming the village for backups if they had them in their basement. Sometimes you hear that. I don't know if there's that.
We do hear that, and you know, with the high water table, there's water in places that there has never been water in recent, many recent years. That, you know, I'll use my yard as an example. I swear I've got sand in my backyard now because I've got so much water. Typically, I've never had anything back there, but it's just so. There's nowhere for the water to go right now. And one of the issues that are complaints that we tend to deal with is I did not have water in my backyard and my neighbor is causing it.
Yeah, I've heard that.
Yeah. But if you look back, what has happened in the last 40 years in that neighborhood? Garages went up, sheds went up in the backyard, berms went in, flower beds, pools has all changed on how the water was intended to flow.
However, we do
not allow one neighbor to divert stormwater to another neighbor, and that is in our zoning code.
It's a purposely directing water onto your neighbor, correct? Yeah.
And if things are being built, we're looking at those.
Right.
Yep.
Yeah, so yeah. It's a real challenge.
I mean, it is
now. If you've got someone that the backyard drops off and the house has been there for 40 years, downspouts are to the back, and the downspouts are now, because of the amount of water, it's getting into the neighbor's yard. They're not purposely directing the water that way, but, you know, that's a tough one because now you're asking them to do what? To install your ground, connect to your lateral?
Yeah. As far as what the village, I remember it was very visible where you had the pumps when the storm basins were filling up and you bypassed directly to the river, and that was possible last year, but the river was only, you know, a foot or a couple feet. Gets any higher than that, you'd be overwhelmed, but that helped, I presume, or you could argue, you know, that kept more properties up the street getting flooded because you jumped on that right away. Was that effective, or do you need more help there if you get the same event?
Are you referring to the sanitary sewer overflow that we had?
No, I thought you were pumping out catch basins with storm runoff that was starting to pile up, and rather than going out to the East River. And was that what you were bypassing on East River Drive, or was that sanitary?
Yes. Sanitary.
That was sanitary. So the DNR heard about that.
Yep, we filled out the proper paperwork to make them aware of what had taken place. And the stations, just they were at capacity, and we're having a hard time keeping up with the flow coming in.
Yeah. So I was mistaken. There was nowhere where you had storm water that reached the bottom of the hill.
Not during that event, but we've gone out and provided assistance to property owners when their private drain pipe was backed up. Try to limit that. It's their responsibility to maintain a private lateral. We've had instances where we've showed up to pump out a lake behind a house to prevent somebody from being flooded.
You know, one solution or one way to help communicate might be to put together a little slideshow or something for social media and boost the heck out of it and spend a couple $100.
Well, part of the entire group is anyone that wants to put together a video, please share with us all.
Yeah.
And because the video.
Yeah, you're right.
Message
same for everyone.
Is all the same for all of us. And,
yeah.
I think that's one of the important things that came out of this is the collaboration of utilizing different agencies to help with this.
Yep.
And all sharing the same information.
Yeah, that's smart.
One of the other challenges that we tend to face after a flood is bulk pickup. You know, if people have to clear out their basement, where do they go with that? And
yep.
Trying to make sure that we are communicating that, and that again would be something on this website that's available for people to find out. Typically, you know, if the flood affected those along East River Drive, because that's where it happens quite frequently, they get flooded, and someone living in the Baldies does not get, because they're up on the hill, they don't get flooded, but they start throwing all the stuff out.
Yeah.
Well, then it just spurs other people to throw all their stuff out.
Yeah.
The intent is to take care of those that got flooded.
Yeah.
So it's just trying to communicate that directly to the residents as well.
Okay. Well, thank you.
I'm just also glad you mentioned sump pumps at the top of the hill. I mean, I can vouch for that. Mine runs quite a bit. I know a lot of other people's runs quite a bit. And if those fail, even though you're sitting at the top of the hill, yeah.
Yep.
So.
Okie doke. Thank you very much.
I will move on to number 15, future agenda items. Is there anything that board members would like to see on a future agenda?
Trustee Simpson. How does the planning regarding the community center come back to us? What's the next step there? Because, you know, we're talking tonight that there's property for sale. Should we think about buying it? I mean, it could be something that we don't need to resolve till the prison gets redeveloped, and maybe that's the perfect place for a new community center. Or it could be soon opportunistic. You know, so how does that come back to the board?
Well, one thing that the staff mentioned tonight was talking to the people who are using that center and to see what kind of services they need. Is that doing its job? And then to be able to see what the options are. Spending $2 million for a building right now probably isn't I don't know. It's a lot of money. That's why I asked the question about leasing. If there's an opportunity to lease.
We can see a report and get a follow-up on the leasing options if for some reason.
Yeah, so if you guys could take a look at that, see if there are any options for leasing, how much square feet we need. I mean, we know how much we have, but is that doing its job? Is that enough? And what are the other options? I'm glad you brought that up. Thanks, Chris. Anything else? Hearing none, I will accept the motion to convene into closed session pursuant to Wisconsin Statute 1985-1C. Considering employment, promotion, compensation, or performance evaluation data of any public employee over which the governmental body has jurisdiction or exercises responsibility. Trustee Harris. Seconded by Trustee Genrich. Roll call. Trustee Harris.
Aye.
Trustee Genrich.
Aye.
Trustee Atwood.
Aye.
Trustee Dresser. Aye. Trustee Green.
Aye.
Trustee Sampson.
Aye.
We are in closed session.